Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington, Kentucky, coming to you live from a very snowy bluegrass region. My name is Chuck.
Hey Chuck, I'm Ben.
Hi Ben.
How's it going?
It's going great.
How was your week off, quote unquote?
It was quote unquote good. No, it was great, man. I mean, it was a good chance to catch up on things, see the family, you know, see the folks who...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
No, that's good in your case?
Yeah, it was good.
That's, you know, cool.
It's always nice to talk with the people who made you who you are a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I got that.
Just to be like, oh yeah, oh yeah, that's right, that's where I'm from.
Oh yeah, that's where I get that nervous tick from. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, all those terrible habits.
Totally. So yeah. So it was good. How about you, Ben?
Oh, very quiet, very nice.
Nice.
We talked about that a little bit in the first hour. I had a birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Coming in strong.
I thought I was going to get to do a show on my birthday, but no, they shut us down. We couldn't do it. It was a week ago.
I understand. Well, I'm glad you're back.
But if you want to wish me a happy birthday, tweet Kyle at Bluegrass Bios on Twitter.
Yeah, and tweet the
and
show.
Tell him to tell me happy, to wish me a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Ben.
Very good.
You're listening to Bluegrass Bios. We're bringing you interviews with cool people here in Kentucky, doing all kinds of cool stuff.
It's our guest laughing at
every
us.
Every week, yeah.
This laughing ban- this, with you.
This
yeah.
banter,
laughing near you.
Yeah.
This banter that we've been working on, lo, these many months.
It's true.
To perfect.
Well, we're a little goofy.
I'm still trying to figure out who's Abbott and who's Costello.
Yeah.
Or who's Jeff and who's Akbar. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the proof is in the pudding. We'll find out by the end of the show.
Okay, sure.
So that other voice you're hearing besides Ben and Chuck is Scott Whidden. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hey, so Scott, you do so many things here in this town.
Thank you.
You know, member of the band Palisades.
Yep.
Which we just heard.
That was Galaxy 500.
That was Galaxy 500, and what was the name of the track?
That was a cover of a Yoko Ono tune called "Listen, the Snow is Falling."
Ah.
It's off of the first Galaxy 500 full length. I think they did a 7-inch of it too. It's my favorite song about snow, so okay. I figured. So I walked in and I was like, "Here's my only opportunity to play that this year with any sort of originality." So
cool.
Walked in and saw Chuck. He's like, "We're playing Galaxy 500." The next thing I see is a message from Chuck. He goes, "I love the Galaxy crew." So I'm like, I knew I'm right at home.
Of course,
so,
man. You know we nerd.
So we had to play some Galaxy.
Bunch of music nerds over here.
It's cool. About to get really, really awful up in here with the nerddom.
So. I'm all about that. So Scott, can you tell us first, where are you from?
I was born in South Carolina, and I lived in Louisiana for about 13 years. I first lived in Lake Charles, Louisiana, which is sort of the heart of Acadiana, Cajun country. It's near the Texas border. Mm-hmm. After that, I moved to New Orleans. While I was in Lake Charles, I did an MFA in creative writing and a master's in English. Started teaching, fell in love with teaching. And then I moved to New Orleans to take a job at Delgado Community College, which is an open admissions college,
cool.
Traditionally positioned to underrepresented populations.
Mm.
I mostly worked with a grant program that worked with Vietnamese and Korean students, and it was super cool. And in hindsight, I should have paid them because I learned so much.
Yeah.
But so I worked there, and I also had my first job running a writing center, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I also was playing music. I was playing with different bands in New Orleans, ranging from like indie rock stuff to playing pickup gigs with blues and jazz groups, which was an education in and of itself. Playing Bourbon Street on 2 a.m.
Nice.
is an education of like literacy and discourse that cannot be paralleled. Couple years after that, I moved to Baton Rouge to be with my now wife, Carrie Green, who is amazing. And I did my PhD at LSU. I lived in Baton Rouge for a couple years. I played with a band called Cortez Del Mar. We put out some records, played a bunch of shows. And then in 2005, I got this really, really interesting phone call from a legend in this town. Her name's Martha Geringer. She taught at Transy for 30-something years. And she called me up. I remember I was waiting at a bus stop. And it was raining.
Where
I was in BR.
NBR.
And so it was the usual 4 o'clock rain, mm-hmm. because it rains every day at 4 on the Gulf Coast. So I'm like in this little bus thing waiting for it to stop to rain. I get a phone call and it's Martha Geringer. And she invited me to come up to Transylvania University. And I was just completely taken by this and to come up and check it out. And next thing I know, after doing some interviewing, I moved here. We were talking about this earlier in August of 2006, and I've been here ever since. So I run a writing program, and I'm also program director of a major in writing, rhetoric, communication.
Wow. Well, we're very happy to have you, Scott.
I'm happy to be here, man.
As part of the cultural toss salad that is Lexington.
Okay.
It's a beautiful complexity.
It's a cultural burgoo. Is that what it is?
It's a cultural burgoo. That's perfect.
Burgoo's just the gumbo of Kentucky.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit about Louisiana? Because, sure. You know, we always hear that there are dialects of English in Louisiana mm-hmm. that are nearly incomprehensible.
My grandmother spoke Cajun French. My grandmother was from Louisiana. I was born in South Carolina, but I always had this sort of fascination as a child of Louisiana. I spent a lot of time growing up in my grandmother's house. She played piano and cool. a bunch of other instruments. Didn't read a lick of music, had no training, and could sing just incredibly well. And a lot of those memories were of her and music of that area. Mm. So that's when I was a little kid. That's kind of one of the two places where I fell in love with music was her and my dad. So what do you want to know about Louisiana, aside from the fact that it's amazing?
Yeah.
Except for their governor. You know, we have a bad run of those.
Bobby Jindal.
goes with all of them. We haven't had a good one in a long time.
I can understand that. Well, I guess I'm curious kind of how were you influenced by being in Louisiana, being from Carolinas, particularly with your music?
Okay.
Do you feel I know New Orleans is an incredibly rich musical history.
I would say Louisiana. Okay, so imagine Interstate 10, which crosses Louisiana east-west, mm-hmm. and on one side of that is New Orleans, and you have trad jazz, you have a rich blues history, you also have this amazing punk rock history. There's a great book called, Glue Guns and Staple Guns. It's a history of New Orleans punk rock.
Wow.
Recommend it for anyone. As you get closer to the middle of the state, Baton Rouge, it's a college town. People mm-hmm. come in and out. Amazing music town in terms of locally produced music. Reminds me a lot of Lexington, mm-hmm. having this like rich pool of all these great musicians. And forgive me, I have a little bit of a cold. So.
Oh, no worries.
When you get towards Lafayette, which is sort of Cajun Creole Central, and Lake Charles, that's where you're going to hear things like Zydeco music. I asked my wife to marry me at a Zydeco show.
Oh,
the first time I hung out with my wife was at a Zydeco show. And so we love – I always think that Zydeco is like James Brown in French. I hate to say there is a, quote, Louisiana music, just like there isn't a, quote, Latin American music,
yeah.
or what have you. Louisiana is this rich cornucopia. I mean, the metaphor is gumbo, if you want to go with that, with mm-hmm. all these different things. Percussion is incredibly important. The New Orleans side with jazz, but also with, like, trad music. In Zydeco, I mean, those drummers are some of the best drummers in the world. They have a real distinct tie to West African music, that sort of backbeat, sort of push kind of thing that makes people dance. So,
who are some bands from Louisiana, like particularly New Orleans punk bands? Because I don't really know much about.
I'm gonna recommend a handful. I could do this all day. I'm gonna recommend a handful of Louisiana bands. Let's see here.
Get your pen and paper ready.
Sure. There is a test.
Okay,
I am a teacher, you know.
Oh.
From Baton Rouge, Louisiana, one of the greatest metal bands of all time is called Vow, T-H-O-U. Mm-hmm. They've been around for forever. They've put out 7 inches and full lengths. They've toured like mad. They're very DIY, sort of the crust side, but also very technical, and some of the coolest guys ever, mm-hmm. and they've been doing it. We're about the same age, and they've been doing it for a long time, so there's that. I would strongly there's a Latin band from New Orleans called Los Popositos, who do boogaloo music, traditional New Orleans 50s boogaloo.
That's awesome.
The guitar player in that band is an old friend of mine named Matt Sacchini, who is now Dr. Matt Sacchini. We're both rock dudes that became academics, and he teaches at Tulane. So I love that band. They're amazing. In terms of Lake Charles Lafayette era, I would highly recommend a band called Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being shameless here because I co-write with Sinners.
Cool.
My former band kind of morphed into them in some ways, and their singer and I co-write together even though I live here. I helped out with their most recent record, country soul rock and roll kind of thing, but very much with a swamp pop, Acadiana influence.
I love that phrase, swamp pop.
Swamp pop.
You don't get that in a lot of places in America. Only a few places. It reminds me of this quote, Barry Lopez says, land shape shapes mindscape.
Yes.
So I'm thinking of swamp pop and the music of New Orleans
being
below sea
level. The way to see Louisiana is by water.
Mm-hmm.
you're below sea level most of the time. If you're south of I-10, you're almost always under sea level. And it's amazing, the friendliness of Louisiana people and the culture and the stories and the language. It's a beautiful place. And it was hard to leave. Mm. I won't lie. It was hard to leave it. But Lexington, I won't, you know, I'm kind of home team here. Like, I'm a fan.
Right there with you, brother.
Okay, so I moved here, and do you want me to tell you that story again?
Sure, please do.
Okay, so
tell us about how did you come here, Scott?
Okay, so I got the job at Transy, and I was really, really lucky. And so it's moving day, and my wife and I are driving our two cars from Baton Rouge to here. There was a moving truck with our stuff. Transy was super nice and helped us out with a lot of things. And we'd already rented a place, so we drive through the night to get here. And the first two people I talked to in this town, I love this story, the first two people. The first thing we did, we were looking for coffee. So we pulled into Third Street stuff. We are bleary and exhausted. And we pull in, and the first person I have a conversation with in this town is Hendrick Floyd. And we talked for like an hour.
Quite an ambassador.
It was great. Yeah, he should have a job in the mayor's office.
He really should.
So I think you said he's on commercials.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah, he's
so.
In a commercial.
I mean, at Wessex, he already is kind of the cultural ambassador of the city for people who land there mm-hmm. first.
Right.
But at that time,
it was Third Street.
Yeah, it was Third Street.
So I hang out with Hendrick, and that's great. Later that night, you know, we're like, you know, we just moved to town. I'd heard about the Dame for years. I mean, I read a lot of rock press.
Rest in power.
Oh, my God. I miss it. Saw a lot of great shows. So we decided to go to the Dame. I can't remember who was playing. But we walk in, and this giant holds the door open for me and my wife, and he's wearing an old 97s t-shirt. One of my wife's favorite bands is the old 97s. She loves that band. And it's Mike Sullivan. And so Sully and my wife and I talk for the next like 2 hours. And so those are the first two people. And I figure from that point, if that's the litmus test, if that's like, you know, is this going to work or not? I was like, we're going to be fine.
That's perfect. So, well, yeah. you met two, I don't know, cultural luminaries here in our city, who were unsuspecting roles at that time. Mm-hmm. And you know, in many ways still are. And I think that's the nature of Lexington, too, is that, you know, you might walk into a coffee shop or a bar, and whoever's working there, it turns out they're like one of the most amazing artists in our entire city.
Or in Mike's case, one of the most, I would call him a connector of creatives.
Man, he is.
Yeah.
Mike is
a historian. He wouldn't use that word, but very much a historian of Lexington and very much a historian of certain kinds of music. And I've never had a boring conversation with that man. So I guess that's the best compliment I can pay for anyone.
That's great. Well, just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU. We're in here talking with Scott Whidden.
Hi.
Of Transylvania University's Writing Rhetoric Center and Palisades.
Thank you.
The band and many other things. Scott, did you ever march in any parades while you were in New Orleans?
Oh, parades. Okay, the one thing, Lexington has good parades, but y'all ain't got Louisiana parades. Oh, it's a different... They're inexplicable. A parade has a literacy and a genre and sort of unspoken rules about parade behavior and what one does and who's running the parade. Let me think. Did I ever march in a parade? I played a bunch of parade after parties, which are hilarious and fun.
What happens at the parade after party? I mean, that isn't already happening during the parade.
I believe, as Chaucer would say, one would be in his cups. So,
that's awesome.
So, but no, I loved going to the, especially like my favorite, I'll tell you my two favorite parades. One is the Zulu Parade, which is early on Mardi Gras Day in New Orleans, which is a historic African-American parade. It is the granddaddy of them all in some ways. And that parade's about caricature. Mm-hmm. It's about making fun of cultural politics. It's about making fun of current events, and it's very tongue-in-cheek but very savvy. My second favorite parade is, if you go to Eunice, Louisiana, which if you drive through Eunice and blink, you missed it. Eunice does their Mardi Gras the way they've done it for hundreds of years. It's all on horseback. It's all in traditional costumes from the 1800s. And what they do is they ride from farm to farm, picking up like some chicken or some whatever, or some okra or some shrimp, and they make a community gumbo. And that's the end of their Mardi Gras day. And it's super cool. So my wife and I used to go out to Eunice all the time to go to that Mardi Gras. And those are good memories.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
That's really cool.
So, you couldn't get me on a horse, but I'll follow one to to get good gumbo any day of the week.
Well, you certainly came to the right spot to get you on a horse.
I don't know. I'll try.
Yeah. So you're originally from the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. So who kind of influenced you? Who encouraged you to pick up a guitar or to learn music?
My dad.
To get started, your dad. Now, what do your parents do?
My father was in construction for a long time. And he did residential and large-scale commercial. He ended up doing construction all over the world. He lived in Israel for a few years. He lived in Egypt for a while. He lived in North Africa. Lived in Greece for a little bit. Wow. And then he came back to the States. He ended up leaving construction to go into the ministry. Mm-hmm. And he also loved traditional bluegrass music. Mm. So I ended up in Kentucky, yeah, like crazy. At the end of his life, he was director of Habitat for Humanity in Greenville County, South Carolina, for almost a decade, mainly because he was the kind of guy that got really excited about moving dirt. Mm. And he was the kind of guy who was really excited about getting people together. Mm. So he loved putting on fundraisers for Habitat. And they might be like a bluegrass show or a barbecue cooking or something. And he could get 80 to 100 people to some of those things and show how, like, building a house for someone who has investment, like sweat equity, into the house, not just changes a family, it changes a neighborhood, it changes lives. So Habitat is a huge deal in my life, and it was a huge deal in his. My mother worked for Department of Social Services, did some counseling work. She also did some sign language work for a little while. My mother plays piano, my father played guitar. I've always played music. I don't remember not. And answer your question.
Do you remember what your first instrument was?
My mom, there's a photograph of me. I think I'm three.
Okay.
And she's her hands are on my hands at the piano playing, I would assume it's like a little one-note things. Yeah. I don't remember this. But I started playing guitar when I was about nine. Simpsonville was a small town. It's near a big city called Greenville. You know, it's a large city. Greenville's kind of grown to Simpsonville, like, you know, large cities kind of take over small towns. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have CD Central. We didn't have the cool indie store.
Yeah.
What I had, you asked about influences.
Yeah.
What I had was friends who had amazingly cool older brothers and sisters.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, who's the person that gave you that record and you were like, oh my God, okay, that's music.
So I'm 15 years old. My best friend was a guy named Matt Fisher. Hi, Matt. I emailed you about listening today. No. We were learning how to play guitar at the same time, and we both started around the age of 9, 10, 11, 12, and we're 15 years old, and his older brothers are DJs at college stations, and we had a friend named Lisa, and her older brother was a DJ at a college station. I think he was at the University of Georgia. And, okay, so I'm going to use a word that not many people know. They would mail us cassettes of their shows, okay? I waited on that cassette every Monday in first period of class because I knew it would be the coolest thing. And I distinctly remember if I could say, what's the moment when life begins? Mm-hmm. It's the moment when Lisa Kessling gave me a tape that had The Replacements, Pleased to Meet Me on one side, and a Smith singles compilation on the other. And I'm in eighth grade.
Wow.
And I took it home. And like, I love my little town where I'm from, but we didn't have.
Oh, yeah. It's a long way to Morrissey. It's a long way from Morrissey.
Yeah, you're right. So I go home and I put it in and mind blown. And so the way I learned how to play guitar was on one side learning traditional bluegrass from my dad, which I think there's a lot more in common between jazz and bluegrass than people think in terms of like the way structures work.
Interesting.
And the way improvisation works.
Yeah.
And I would sit down. And I would put the cassette in the tape deck, and I'd have my guitar in my lap, and I would learn every song by ear on REM's document.
Wow.
Or I would learn every song by ear off The Smithereens' Green Thoughts. And Johnny Marr is a huge part of this. Mm. And then, you know, diving into other people's record collections. So I'm a little bit of a pilferer. Like, I will listen. I'll go over to someone's house and go through their, oh, I should learn that. I should da, da, da. And that's basically my music education. Later on, when I was in college, I worked at a really cool record store, and that should have been credit hours because I was just figuring out what I wanted to listen to and loved it. So in answer to your question, what made it happen was pre-internet, pre-social media, it was just social.
Yeah.
It was my dad sitting down and showing me this is this Bill Monroe tune.
Mm.
Oddly, I ended up in Lexington.
Yeah.
or Matt, hey, I got a tape. It's the Smithereens. We got to hear it. Or it's 10,000 Maniacs or whatever. Or it's Tom Petty. And we would sit down and learn how. And by the end of like a weekend, we would have learned a whole record, both guitar parts.
Wow.
Playing with the little fader knob because someone's guitar would be on the left and someone would be on the right. So you could flip it and play along with George Harrison or what have you. So that's kind of how I grew up. And that's how I learned how to play.
And the rest is history.
The rest is a present.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the rest it's happening is, right now.
You're right. So. It's modern history.
So I was wondering if we might play. There's a couple things that I'm really proud of right now. I don't mean to be self-promoting or what have you, but there's two things I'm really proud of.
Yeah, this is neither the time nor the place to be self-promoting.
Yeah,
really?
In fact, the show is all about you, Scott.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Please. Literally, and
everyone's turning off right now. The first thing is Palisades just put out recently a split 7-inch.
Can you tell the people, what is Palisades?
Palisades is it's a band with me and Neil Bell, who's a drummer, who also does great arrangement work and is a great visual artist. Killer painter and illustrator, and Mark Richardson, who's a bass player. We've been together for about 5 years, 5.5 years. We've put out 4 EPs. We're in the middle of making our first full length. We kind of like the short form EP because you can focus on the details and you have this much time to record a record, so let's do all of this stuff in 4 songs as opposed to 12 songs.
Yeah.
But we're in the middle of making a full length right now.
Where are you guys recording it at?
We recorded with J. Tom Nato, the Llama, the legend, at Shangri-La Recording. We did some work with Dwayne Lundy, who's amazing. But mostly Tom was the producer, mixer, Sacagawea, leading us through all of our bad decisions. I know calls to action are not appropriate, but I would say here's a piece of advice. If you want to make a record, make it with Tom or Dwayne, period. They're amazing people. So Tom became a fast friend of the band. Tom has amazing communication skills. Mm-hmm. He has great taste, technological sensibility, how to make the thing work.
And a great musician.
Yeah, no kidding. And can play any. He's a really great piano player. And mostly he's known for pedal steel and guitar. He's a phenomenal pianist. And he's also got a great sense of humor. Tom and I share a sense of puns that drive my bandmates crazy.
Word nerds unite.
Amen. So we put out, we did a series of 7-inches with Tom. And the most recent one is a split. One side is Palisades and the other is the mighty Big Fresh, John Ferguson. Wasn't John on a couple, John, 3 ago?
He was.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was here about
a Transylvania employee.
2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah. Do you guys hang? You guys conspire together over there?
Dude, he's my favorite person to have lunch with. I'll say that. And we got a couple things in the works. He's just another friendly face on a campus full of friendly faces.
That's great.
So I was thinking we'd play one song from each side. Side A is Palisades. The song's called Pretty Thief. And I will cue it up right here. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go straight into a song called Atlantis, which is by Big Fresh.
That sounds great.
Be cool?
Let's do it. All right. Well, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 with Scott Whitten. We'll be right back. You're listening to Palisades.
Just a pretty thief.
Well, maybe you can shout about how you're beautiful, you're miserable. Please don't ever count on me. You're only just a pretty thief.
You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU FM here in Lexington, Kentucky. That last track you heard was Big Fresh off the Split with Palisades Called Signal Delayed. We're here in the studio with Scott Whidden.
Hello.
Talking about all the things that Scott does. Playing in Palisades, you know, bringing that Nolan's flair by way of Carolina.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know,
it's kind of funny. People ask where my home is, and I say my home is Lexington now because it feels like home.
Yeah. When you're here long enough, it feels like home.
10 years this year.
Yeah. Yeah. When you hit the
decade,
you're
stuck with me.
Yeah.
I think.
So, no, we're happy to have you.
Awesome.
So, Scott, can you tell us a little bit about your day job? What do you do over at Transit?
I do a number of things. I think if you teach at a small liberal arts college, you're kind of, since this is Lexington, I'm going to use a basketball metaphor.
Please.
If you're at a small liberal arts college, you're always the sixth player off bench, which means you got to play a lot of positions. Mm-hmm. I teach classes ranging from first-year writing. I love working with first-year students. To be honest, my favorite students to work with are typically first-year students. I love that energy and the enthusiasm and the newness. And I do think, you know, the first two semesters of college tend to set a trajectory. So if you can put a lot of support and emphasis on those first two semesters is what I meant, then the student will probably do well for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So I teach first-year writing classes. I also teach classical rhetoric, which is where we read Plato and Aristotle and Cicero and Seneca and all kinds of old stuff that is incredibly relevant right now with a certain president. Unfortunately. And president-elect. Yeah. And
Justin Trudeau. That's the president you're talking about.
Right,
he's a prime minister. Never mind.
I like that guy. So what else do I do? I occasionally teach a creative nonfiction class. And I also, we'll talk about this in a minute, but I, with my partner in crimes, amazing teacher, and she's one of my heroes, actually, Dr. Carrie Hallman, we teach a writing for nonprofits class, and we've been doing a lot of work with Lyric Theater and Community Action Council. The other part of my job is I direct a writing center. And a writing center is a space in which a student can come in, a first year or a senior. They're at the beginning or at the end of a project. They're doing something for class, or they could be writing a resume to get a job or a cover letter to get a scholarship. And what they do is they have a space in which to be creative. I don't use the word help,
because I don't want to give it as it is a space that is remediated.
Mm.
What I think of a writing center is it's sort of a cross between having a personal trainer at a gym and being in a recording studio or a art maker space where you are around other creative people. You're in a creative space that is energetic, enthusiastic, with things that are manipulable, like whiteboards or tables we can move or a lot of digital resources, to where students can get excited about a piece of writing, where they can see, oh, okay, I'm really confused by this prompt. I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do. Am I narrating or analyzing? And what does that mean, really? Or, hey, I'm really good at writing these English papers, and now I'm in this business class, and I've got to totally rethink voice here. So I think in a writing center space, what we try to do is to help with creativity, communication, collaboration, all these sorts of things, to help build a sense of community. As a part of that, I serve on two boards. I serve on the Southeastern Writing Center Board, which is a collaboration of writing centers from here to Florida and back. And then I just got elected to the International Writing Center Association Board, which is, a couple weeks ago, I was Skyping with someone who runs a writing center in the Middle East and someone who runs a writing center in Ireland. And so it's an international group. We meet twice a year generally. We have a lot of digital meetings to try to set policy, to try to help create resources, especially for writers who come from different backgrounds or have different sorts of challenges. I love that gig. That's when I came in, I sat down with Martha Geringer, who was my former boss. She's now retired. She ran the writing center. She founded it. She's sort of a hero of mine as well. She was part of the peace movement in the 60s. She's a poet. And she taught me how to run a writing center and how to create a space that I hope is as student-centered as humanly possible. So I get to work with about 22 staffers. They're undergraduates from different majors. We train them, and then they work for us. They go to classrooms and do workshops. They do workshops with faculty, helping faculty members develop better assignments and develop better syllabi. We do all kinds of stuff. Last semester, we did a series of workshops with every science major at Transy who was planning on going to medical school, every one of them, to help them develop pieces for their application packets to medical school. And it was super cool. Like, it was nerdy, and we were talking about writing and different communication styles. And I left, it was weird because those were night sessions. And by the end of the day, I'm exhausted and usually heading to band practice. Those sessions, when I walk out of the writing center, I feel good because it's a really cool place.
That's awesome. And I love the idea of the metaphor of a personal trainer coming
the
up.
Personal trainer means
four more stanzas. You got
right,
this.
Right. It's a personal trainer, but also like an art. Like, we talked about working with Tom Nada. What makes Tom a great producer is not just his technical skills, although that's part of it. What makes him a great communication? He's a great listener. And I can say, hey, Tom, in this song, I'm kind of trying to do this. And he'll think about it. And he'll say, have you listened to this? Or maybe we should think about this. And he's so good at explaining complicated things in a way that doesn't make me feel stupid. And I think that's what a writing center does. So, in fact, I just recently published an article with my co-writer, Stacia Watkins, down in Nashville. We interviewed people who were involved with music, and we talked with them about their creative process, and we connected those ideas to the daily work of a writing center, and we just published it in a journal called Southern Discourse in the Center, which is like that. It's weird, because for so long, I tried to keep my writing life, my school life, and my music life very separate. For like a year, no one in my PhD program knew that I was in a band. And for like 6 months, no one in my band, they knew I was involved with LSU in some way. But over the past decade, they've kind of slowly creeped into each other. And I was like, fine, I'm not going to avoid it anymore. So I wrote about it for a year and I just published that piece.
Do you think it's going to lead to more convergence as your worlds collide?
I hope so. I don't know how that would look, but I hope it does. I think there's things at Transy that are really exciting, such as the Digital Arts Technology Lab. And those things sort of connect those two areas. I think the work that Kurt Godey and Cremena Todorova are doing connect the creative and the argumentative and the visual, especially with Kurt. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
I try.
Yeah, because I think you're so good at both.
Thank you. So I work really hard. So
have you, since you've started at Transy, have you discovered any secrets or things that you didn't know about the university? Like, people always talk about Raskeller and kind of these, the idea that there's a body, a cadaver.
Oh, it's Transy. There's a crypt.
Yeah, it's a crypt.
You want to go see the crypt?
Right? I would love to.
Let's broadcast from the crypt.
Live from the crypt.
let's do Halloween from the... Okay, let's get the paperwork rolling.
Can you tell us about the crypt a little bit?
I'm not the best at telling the story, so take what I say with a grain of salt. What I know is there was a cat named Constantine Raffinesque. Mm-hmm. He was a contemporary of Darwin. Mm-hmm. He was a faculty member at Transy. This is the beginnings of the time in which we are thinking about tenure as we know it now, where you have a probationary period, you get tenure, and you're kind of there, you're married to the college. Okay. Well, he apparently he wasn't a very good botanist. I don't know. Ask Jamie Day about that. But what the rumor is that he had an affair with someone who was involved with the president or the dean at the time, and he was from Eastern Europe, and he was cast out of the college, and he walked down the steps and said, "I put a curse on you, Transylvania," and apparently 7 years later was the Great Fire of Transylvania. Mm-hmm. But no one can really correlate the date that he left and yeah. whatever. And so apparently every 7 years something bad happens, but what that turns into is that if anything bad happens, it's the curse. Yeah, so, but he's buried, so you're facing Old Morrison. Mm-hmm. If you look to the left of the columns, that sort of square concrete-looking thing, that's the crypt. Oh. It's kind of – when I came in from my interview, there was this really wonderful woman who was sort of my host to help get me from part of interview to part. And we're walking along, and she says out of nowhere, "So you want to see the crypt?" And I'd been off a plane for like 12 hours. So I was like, sure.
Is this part of the interview?
Yeah, right. We're, yeah. But in terms of what your question was, history of Transylvania or some things that surprised me. Let me see here.
How about a student that surprised you? You know,
I get surprised every day. I get surprised every day.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about your nonprofit class that you're doing with the Lyric?
Because
I think that's really fascinating, and I think it's connecting Transy to the community around it.
Oh, God, we have great neighbors, man. Okay, so in business writing, and specifically in writing for nonprofits, there are many written genres that are incredibly difficult. Some universities teach them explicitly. Some classes at Transy do these in other ways. Mm-hmm. What Carrie Hallman and I were interested in was A, connecting Transy with our neighbors, mm-hmm. because we have such cool neighbors like y'all.
Thank you.
And hey, props. And the Lyric Theater's got my heart. Hi, Donald.
Yeah.
Hi,
shout
Ashley.
Out to Ashley.
What's Donald. Up? Ashley sat in on stage with my band once and crushed it.
Ashley is.
She sang Summertime and nailed it. It was incredible.
I've seen multiple weeks at the Green Lantern Wednesday karaoke nights of Ashley just shutting the room down.
She was so good sitting in. I'm tangenting, but I'm from the South. That's what we do.
Yeah.
So there was two guitar solos in the song we did with her. And her vocals were so good, I forgot one. I just kind of like, oh, that's amazing. Chords. So,
I got to get her in my band. Wait, she is right now.
Right. So the first thing was about connecting with community. Second was demystifying the act of writing for students. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of students think writing happens in English. That's not true. If you're a chemist, you write to make money. That's what you do. You patent and you write articles. If you're in business, you do proposals. If you're in psychology, you write all kinds of things. If you're in marketing. So we wanted to demystify this act of writing only happening X. Mm. That writing happens everywhere, and it takes many different shapes and different forms. It's always audience-driven. Mm. It's always genre-driven. What are you trying to do? I mean, for me, every piece of writing to some degree is I'm talking to someone to get them to do something, even just to emote. Mm. We taught the class as a May term, a 3-week mini term a couple years back. And that was great. Had great students. We had students from across majors, which was super cool. It wasn't just like our usual suspects. We broke them into groups. We did some training in terms of certain types of writing. We did a lot of reading about the work of nonprofits. Students in those classes did visual text, such as flyers. They also did web text, such as videos. They also did sort of consulting work, such as sitting down and saying, this nonprofit wants to reach out to millennials. How do you do that? Here are some millennials. Ta-da!
Yeah.
So then that was the May term version.
That was like the 7-inch before the full length. And about a year and a half goes by, memory not working. And we had an opportunity to do it as a full length semester. So we did that this fall. We partnered with Community Action Council. We also partnered with the Lyric Theater. They had certain projects they needed done. Mm. We had students who were interested and willing and thoughtful and creative. And we put one-on-one together, basically. And at the end of the semester, we had this really – this was my favorite day. This is where I get to be like a dad. I don't have kids, but I got to be like a dad at this moment. And we had all of our student groups showcasing their projects for our community partners and our president – and other university admins and other teachers coming by. And I about lost it because the projects were so good. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a kid saying, I got to check this class off to get this credit. It wasn't, I got to get through my GEs or what have you. Mm-hmm. It was students who were legitimately invested in the writing they were doing because they saw the partners they were working with, the nonprofits they were working with, were doing soul work. We're doing heart work, and that work is incredibly hard. And the end of that class, I was like, wow. It was one of the best academic experiences I've been a part of. We're in the process of looking into how we're going to teach that class on a regular basis so that we can continue those projects with those same community partners and hopefully expand to other community partners.
And that's awesome. And I think that's incredible work. And I think
shout out to Carrie Hallman, by the way. Like, she's every day. So I team taught with her, okay? Mm-hmm. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Hey, it's okay. Brother, I would rather hear it.
No. But every day, not only did I get to work with great students, I got to learn from one of the most gifted pedagogues I've ever met, who's 10 years younger than me. And so, like, it was super cool. So I had a good time.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, yeah, I was just going to say that I think sometimes our universities here in Lexington, BCTC, Transy, UK, can be a little insular sometimes.
And, lot insular sometimes.
Very much so. And I think reconnecting, not only just getting out in the community and learning about what's out there already in Lexington, kind of helps the city and helps those places, definitely, but also keeps people here.
Yeah.
Keeps Lexington growing, which it has every year for who knows how long.
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. a long time. So props to you.
I have
guys
a theory about Lexingtonians. Do you want to hear my theory?
Please.
Okay, this is my theory. This is about native Lexingtonians, like mm-hmm. native born. So when little baby happens in the world in Lexington, there's mm-hmm. a microchip. Microchip's placed like behind baby's ear. Mm-hmm. At 18 or 22, microchip goes off and it says, leave. And at 26, 27, 28, it says, come back. But I do think this town, unlike other cities, it doesn't seem to have a brain drain. Mm-hmm. I think this is a town of creatives. I think it's an incredibly appealing city. You and I were talking about sort of the entrepreneurial spirit, whether it's a brewery or a coffee shop or a band or a recording studio or a community radio station or what have you. People here have a genuine friendliness, but they also have sort of a Midwestern pragmatism. They know how to get things done.
It's true.
And that's one of the things that the people that I admire in this town, the Dwayne Lundys, you guys, Robbie Morgan, Chuck Creasy, Chris Eddy, the Smiley Pete crew, is they know how to get things done and have a really good time while they're doing it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty impressive.
That's
so
true. That's the hardest balance to strike. Mm-hmm. You're right. And speaking of getting things done, you have a solo album coming out, right?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
As a songwriter and as a writer, I try to write every day, and I have songs that they're obviously Palisade songs. They have that thing, but I had like this batch of songs over the course of about a 15-month period that they sounded Palisadesy, but not. Mm-hmm. And so I kept kind of putting them off to the side and not really thinking about them. And I'd play them, and once in a while I'd play a solo set and I'd play one or two of those songs, And I decided, okay, it's time to do this. So I called Tom Nato, and I called Robbie Cosenza, the great Robbie Cosenza, Fanged Robot, and so many other projects around town. And I sat down with them and said, would you guys help me do this record? I really want Tom to serve as a producer and to steer me through this. And so I played them all the songs in sort of demo-y form, crappy iPhone form, and they didn't hate them, and we got together and talked a good bit, and then for 6 days over the summer
We sat in Tom's studio and we tried to make things significantly different from Palisades. They're mainly acoustic guitar based. They also have percussion. Tom played amazing keys and bass and pedal steel and God knows what else. And then we also, towards the end of the process, Cecilia Wright, who plays with Warren Byram and plays with the Lone Tones down in Knoxville and a lot of other projects. She's a brilliant cellist. What the world may not know enough, she's also a brilliant singer. Mm. And so she sang harmonies with me on a couple of these. So, I've not played these for anyone in the world yet. So I was wondering, since you invited me here, maybe we could listen to one or two of these together.
We would love to premiere your solo
album.
This
is the world premiere, yeah.
Now, what are you calling the album, Scott?
The album is titled after a line from Walt Whitman. It's called Close Quarters with the Enemy, which seems...
Yeah.
Back then, when I chose the title, I didn't realize how appropriate that was. But I think let's start off with the title track, and then I'll play a different one after. That
sounds great.
Cool. Yeah,
sure. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here with Chuck and Ben, and Scott Whidden is our guest, and you're about to hear the world premiere of a track off of his unreleased album. First time this has ever been heard to the public, Close Quarters with the Enemy, from Scott Whidden here on Bluegrass Bios.
It's in the easy way they stumble into a smile. We've seen what they know. The cards they hold, the speed of our spinning. We've read all the files and stared at their eyes and turned out the lights. It's the way of the etiquette, it seems to pass muster.
At Doodle's Breakfast and Lunch, we bring locally raised and grown products directly from Kentucky farms to your plate. We do this not only because it tastes better, supports the community, and provides jobs. We do it because it's just the right thing to do.
like supporting this radio station. Doodles is proud to support WLXU and Lexington Community Radio by bringing you local talent and content that matters. WLXU does for your brain what we do for your belly. Doodles is open Tuesday through Sunday, 8 to 2, and is located at the corner of Limestone and 3rd. Our small batch, made with love, biscuits, and gravy, is on the special board and runs out quickly. So you can come early and mention this ad for a surprise. Doodles, it's comfort food with a conscience. And we're a Kentucky proud restaurant. Lexington Community Radio thanks Doodles for supporting true community radio.
Alright, party people, welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU. I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
I'm Scott.
And we've been chatting with Scott. Thank you so much for coming in, Scott.
Thank you for the invitation. This has been super fun, guys. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good.
This has been a great, not only to just geek out and talk about music and Louisiana and Transy and all the things we've talked about.
Crips.
Just,
yeah, we talked about Crips.
That's true. We did talk about Crips. And Zydeco.
And Zydeco music.
Yeah. The whole gamut. But yeah, to learn a little bit about you.
Thank you.
More about you. That's great.
I'm a very lucky man, so thanks for hanging out. I appreciate it. It's been super cool.
Well, thank you. And can you tell us any ideas when this solo album's going to drop?
Well, we're looking at a spring release. The record is done. We're putting together some web materials and some video materials right now. And kind of getting the final pieces and looking at some shows both in traditional spaces and some shows out of town, but also some shows in some non-traditional spaces.
Arby's?
Parking lot of Arby's. Get it right. I'm more of a Wendy's man. Get it?
Yeah, I understand.
But things like, I don't know, try to make... Music doesn't just have to happen in... I love playing, you know, venues. Mm. The music doesn't just have to happen in venues.
True. So that's New Orleans coming out.
Oh,
coming
up. Thank you. I appreciate that. So we're looking at some creative things right now. And again, working with Tom and Robbie and Cecilia, just been so supportive. And I couldn't ask for better comrades.
That's great. So, Scott, if people want to check out your music or come see you live, okay, where can people go?
Palisades.bandcamp.com is a good place to go for Palisades stuff. We're also, you can look up palisades.ky on Facebook. And adoreforadesk.com will be going up in a couple of weeks. And that'll be the site that houses solo material and some score work that I've done and some other projects as well.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Scott. And
play us out one more.
Play us out one more. Please. Can you tell us about this track?
This is the last song on the record. It was also the last song we finished. And it's called What We Knew All Along. So I hope you had a good time. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
We did. Thank you so much, Scott. And you're listening to Bluegrass Bios. We'll be back next Saturday. Adios.
See ya.